Hello, everybody. Welcome to V Speaks Conversations with Heart and Soul. I am your host, Lisa Burwell, and also the editor-in-chief and founder of V Magazine, which is celebrating 14 years. That's a feat in and of itself, and we thank you for our listeners, our readers, our fans, and everybody that helps support loving our magazine. Podcast started a couple of years ago as a multi-level platform, as an offshoot of the magazine. And I have had the great pleasure to get to know people that we've written about and are going to write about in the magazine on a much deeper and broader level by being able to have this platform. And today is just one example of how great that is. I am so pleased to be able to interview Chris Rebels, who is the founder, principal, and architect of Christopher Interiors and Architecture and Land Planning, out of Birmingham, New York, and California. Without further ado, Chris, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Lisa. Yeah. It's an honor to be here.
Oh, I'm so excited. So excited on so many levels, as we were talking about before. One of them being that besides you being amazingly prolific in all that you're doing in your retail, architecture, running three different offices across the country, and then doing a lot of good works in ministry and having a philanthropic heart, I am jealous and wonder, how can you do all of this? I mean, seriously.
Oh, the secret is obviously having great people that I surround myself with, that's the biggest blessing, honestly. Just talented people that have a passion, similar passion, similar world and life view.
And the first location is Birmingham,
right? That's correct.
And then what came second?
Well, we almost simultaneously, we were doing work in Beverly Hills and had a new project in Studio City, so we started working a good bit on the West Coast. And then people in Manhattan, Rochester, New York, upstate New York asked us to do work. And ironically, some folks that were from the area that were working at an architecture firm were in Los Angeles and one was in Manhattan, so we engaged with them and just started doing more work in those areas.
So was it like legitimately organic growth?
It was organic.
So
yes.
You were that good.
No.
Well, and you are that good.
No, thank you. Yeah. I mean, I just am blessed with great people, honestly. And I'm not. That's not false humility.
It's, yeah. Oh, I know. I agree with you 110%. Without a team, like you were, the one-man show thing is like, it is not possible.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't be either. You know, you should be creating teams. And if you're a leader, that's what you should be doing too, you know?
Yeah. And people ask us quite often, how do you get the work? You know, I say, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, we might be in a publication or somebody might find us on social media, but it's interesting. A lot of people just find us through connections and word of mouth, even across the country.
Well, in 2002, when you opened, too, I mean, we didn't have the benefit of the various social marketing platforms, which
That's
are
right.
pretty beneficial right now. So, yeah, it was like old-fashioned days was just magazines and whatnot, right?
Yeah, and word of mouth.
But now with the advent in the last good, hard 4 or 5 years with social, is that like expediting your bandwidth for your brand as well?
I think so. I mean, I don't know that we're super sophisticated in that area or arena, but we'll have over 1 million people touch our business on any given month across the social media platforms.
Wow.
And, you know, I assume that has to help, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, and it's very good.
Yeah, it really is.
That's amazing. So how much are you hands-on in the business of architecture, actually? Or are you just like the CEO, the president, like running the company and growing the company and managing?
I am very engaged in design. I'm very passionate about design. We've talked briefly just about sort of where our heart is and how we're directed into the venues or fields of inspiration, I guess, that we are both in, you know, in a creative space. But if I didn't design, I would feel like a part of my soul was ripped out of me.
Mm-hmm.
I remember years ago watching the movie Chariots of Fire and Eric Little, who was later a missionary in China, and his sister who was pushing him onto the mission field to and telling him, don't run, you know, and that line where he said, God made me fast for a reason, and when I run, I feel God's pleasure. I feel that way. You know, I think God for whatever reason, gave me some creative talents and gifts. And so when I create, I feel God's pleasure.
I feel the same thing. Sometimes I want to run away and not do this anymore.
Me too.
I really do. And then, like, I'll start doing something and doing a project, and then I can feel that my whole energy and my life is coming back into me again. And then I just say, I really like what I do.
Yeah, we say that in our office quite often. There are things that you can do in any given week. On Friday, you're just spent.
Right.
You know, and then there are some weeks when, and this is for me is true, like if I can sequester myself and have a drawing pad and sketch for a week,
you get
Friday by Monday, I'm so invigorated. Instead of bled dry,
yes,
I'm inspired.
Because it's what you were destined to do.
I think so.
And that's so important. So I want to talk about so many things. A big one for me, and it's my heart with all of your charities and how you pour in to so many things, but right now, with your three different locations, and let's just talk a little bit from the get-go, from the jump, on the work that you're doing here in our area, on the 30A area. And I have a question for you before you answer. You're in LA, you're doing the Beverly Hills thing, you're in Manhattan. So how is it really as crazy here as I think it is, or is it also like that in those other two marketplaces too?
In terms of volume,
and
it's crazy.
It's crazy. Thank you. Okay, so
it's legitimate.
That's a layman's way of, I just didn't know, because to me it seems like from an interior design vantage point, and homes, and the homes getting bigger and bigger, and people can't buy them fast enough, and we seem to be running out of land and all that. So this is definitely at the moment, like, it has surpassed the land of milk and honey to me. It's more like it's gone like too fast. But, you know, everyone has to keep catching up, because we were all sort of, you know, the world stopped for a couple of years. And so there's a big game of catch up, which we're blessed.
That's true.
But it's hard
to
keep up. So there's a big project that you did or are doing in Grayton Beach.
We did a project we completed a few years ago for a very influential family. We have multiple projects in the region. We have about 14 projects here right now, so all up and down 30A.
And a few in Alice, if not.
We have three in Alice. And two more that are sort of on the come, and then we have seven in Camp Creek, several others, and so we're busy.
Yeah.
And I love it. I mean, you know, coming here is also inspirational.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so beautiful.
So you grew up in Birmingham?
I did.
Okay, so this is like the playground for your town, and so you must have been coming here since you were a kid, right?
I was born in Central Florida and actually lived in Cocoa Beach for the first 5 years of my life. But, you know, and I do have some memories of that, but moved to Birmingham when I was 6 years old.
Mm-hmm.
But we've always come down to the panhandle to vacation and love it.
Yeah, it's changed so much.
Yeah.
So with your background, you must have always loved when you first started coming to 30A Seaside and what they were doing, which was the genesis of everything that happened with new urbanism.
It was.
And so what are the, so you've got nine projects right now here?
Oh, we have at least 14.
Oh, 14, you said. That's right. So with those projects, are you doing everything where you're doing the furnishings as well and the architecture?
Not all of them, but some. And that's an important part of our business that I think is unique in some respects. When we first started doing this, fewer firms did it. But early in my, I guess, reintroduction to this world of design, I, in my hubris, I would work on a project from the architectural standpoint and maybe go 60 or 70% through a project and then engage an interior designer. You know, it's like scratching our head, well, what about the interiors?
Mm-hmm.
And the really talented designers would bring up fantastic questions. You know, what happens when the sun hits this piece of art, or what happens when, you know, someone's sitting here and trying to watch TV, or what about the ergonomics of a kitchen? You know, the really thoughtful, talented designers beyond the decoration part were engaging us in questions that maybe we had not thought of. Mm-hmm. And so we were finding ourselves taking two or three steps backwards. So several years ago, I just went on this search. I wanted to find some really talented interior designers so that we could then introduce them to a project earlier in the process. So for us, one of the ways that I think we differentiate our product is that early on, from the very first charrettes that we'll do, design sketches and concepts, we're engaging a full and comprehensive team. We have architecture, interior design, landscape. We'll have consultants sitting at a table with us, helping us think through how we can make a product and project much more synergistic, symbiotic, so that the language that's spoken across the design platforms is cohesive. And I think that's been a real advantage for us.
That's amazing. So, and then are you then sometimes doing the interiors yourself as well, because you have the retail location and then your craftsman with the customized garage carriage doors and all that? So you're doing a lot of different things. Are you making the doors like in Birmingham or something?
There
too?
Is a very good friend of mine who's just an amazing artisan. That's and beautiful. He makes garage doors. He makes custom aluminum bed swings for us, and he just does the most beautiful craftsmanship. Mm. He was he's a welder, and so for years in his career, he was the guy that would go in and tell if the welds were good. He would analyze the welds. Mm-hmm. He would survey them. He would scrutinize them. He's so fastidious that his product is just absolutely spectacular. It's a work of art, and so we just talked about, hey, what if we did something together? What instead of a, just for example, instead of a garage door being an afterthought, hey, you just go to a company and you pull something off a shelf. What if we made that an integral part of the design? Mm-hmm. And he's done such a phenomenal job of partnering with us on those things. Thank you.
Are you putting any of the custom carriage house doors here too?
We are.
They are very, very stunning. Yep. We'll show when we're finished producing this as well, because they are a work of art.
Thank you.
And then I see your sketches below that, so you're sketching the designs.
Absolutely.
So everything that you just described is very Frank Lloyd Wright, where he was like designing it, the space to basically, meld into the exterior and then making his own furniture too.
Yeah.
So isn't that like very much that principle, which sounds like very heady and all that. But in reality, what I've watched, even watching with my own family, in the business too, that when you have such a vision as the architect and you're the first one to the gate to create something, and then if you have to turn that over to somebody else, depending on like what they do with like different finishes or their interpretation of your design to retrofit the interiors, it either enhances or detracts, but it doesn't do nothing.
Yeah, that's so well said.
Okay.
I could not agree more. I mean, the way you articulate it is absolutely true.
Right. So then there's way more control over the vision by what you're doing and, design, build. Like the only thing you're not doing is building the house, but I'm sure you could do that pretty easy, right? Okay. All right. Well, that's pretty incredible.
Builders are a special breed.
They
and
are
I think
a special
they bring
breed.
So they, a good quality builder brings so much to
they
the table.
They do. So I don't know. I think you might know this, but we are rounding the corner. Today is three weeks left to go to the reveal of our fifth show home here in Seagrove.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And you had a show home 2019?
We've done multiple. We did one in 19, one in 17.
Okay, and both benefited two different charities.
That's correct.
And what was the last one, the life?
The last one we did benefited an adoption charity.
Okay.
So our client, who's just they're a wonderful family, they've adopted seven children, several with special needs.
Wow.
And so they just have a heart for children and sharing what they've been blessed with others. And I believe that it is one of the most beautiful pictures of the gospel. You're taking someone that at least in his case, that has physical infirmities, poverty-stricken, and bringing them into a family that can bless them in many ways. And the mutual blessing is just beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
So we partnered with them to support this charity, and we gave over 100% of the take to the charity. And, and 2 years before that, we did a similar project for a pediatric cancer research charity. So it was helping research for cancers, which is very underfunded for young children.
Wow, so impressive and commendable, and what we're supposed to be doing, completely giving back and basically, you know, I am my brother's keeper.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah,
and you are. So 2017, we featured your Christopher Kids in our magazine too. And talk a little bit about, like, basically like a division of like the furniture for the children and yeah. all of that.
Well, our staff over the years, when we've done these show houses or other sort of philanthropic efforts, you see them coalesce around these ideas in a really special way, in a very sort of spiritual way, in a way that I think engages our team and mm-hmm. brings our team together. And it's just beautiful. You know, it's beautiful to see these creative people that have a heart for something that's so much bigger than they are. And we've talked for years, what if we did this very consistently and how could we do it? So several years ago, we started a 501c3. We have full-time salaried staff. We funded 100% for the day-to-day activities. And then every dollar that is donated to the charity goes to these children. And what we do is we provide design services and product and construction services to children with an infirmity or a socioeconomic challenge or whatever the case may be. And in a way, it's sort of like a Make-A-Wish type thing where people will come to us and say, okay, my child has a special need, and it's a physical need, and they've always dreamed of having a treehouse, right? Mm-hmm. And so we'll design them a treehouse that's mm-hmm. handicap accessible and wow. is furnished with fun things that, mm-hmm. that really just brightens their world, you know. Mm-hmm. And you know this. Mm-hmm. I mean, kids gravitate to these little niches and nooks mm-hmm. that are scaled to their size, mm-hmm. and for somebody that's in a wheelchair, mm-hmm. you know, to be able to go in their own space, it does something. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's this visceral, mm-hmm. I don't know, intangible mm-hmm. response that is absolutely beautiful. And you know, it's better to give than to receive. Yeah. I tell you, yeah. the greater blessing is for us,
yeah,
for our team. It's just it's spectacular.
That's amazing. So impressive. And you have 50 people on staff right now, and then you're doing all of this. And we briefly were talking a little bit, like you do such excellent work, and the whole world isn't wired to like be craftsmen. Everything they do, like basically there's a lot of people that approach business from a business vantage point only, and that's fine. There's nothing yeah. wrong with it. It's just not how I approach my business, and I don't think it's the way you approach yours either. So what are little backstory that you were telling me earlier when you're Auburn grad, played football for your Division I, you're obviously very talented, and then you were working in ministry.
I did.
Okay. Okay. For 9 years, right?
Yes.
Okay. And you liked it, you enjoyed it. So how did you go from the ministry into segueing into this yeah. like huge conglomeration that you have?
Well, I studied architecture at Auburn, mm-hmm. and you know, I've always been passionate about design. I graduated, I went to work for a larger commercial firm mm-hmm. in Montgomery, Alabama, and my younger brother was very involved in a student ministry as a high school student, and so when they would go on trips, they would ask for volunteers, and mm-hmm. I would volunteer and join them. Mm-hmm. So a couple of years out of college, the two gentlemen who ran that ministry out of a church asked me to go to lunch, and then subsequently asked me if I would consider working with them mm-hmm. on staff, and I said no. So I just spent 5 years of
training,
virtual torture at Auburn, studying architecture,
right.
sleepless nights, mm-hmm. And I just sort of put it aside. No way. And they left, and I remember them like it was yesterday, walking out of the room saying, "Will you just pray about it?" Uh-huh. So I did, and over the next couple of months, I just had this tug on my heart. So I went mm-hmm. and worked on staff. There was a 2-year commitment. I thought I would do it for 2 years. Mm-hmm. I ended up going to seminary, ended up taking on more responsibility. We had multiple staff. I had about 14 people under me at the time. Then I worked with student young adults and young married couples, and I just was in this world of ministry and loved it, you know, and I really kind of forgot about architecture, and I say quite often I sort of stumbled back into this. So I left there, and I was going to do some doctorate work in seminary. And a friend of mine, I was doing a prison ministry where we'd go out and lead a study at a prison. We did that together for about 14 years. This same gentleman asked me, would I help him with a master bedroom addition on their house as just a side job. And I was transitioning to this seminary thing, and I told him I would help, and I did. And then somebody asked me to do a front porch, and then somebody asked me to do something else, and a house, and I started working out of my house, doing more and more, and then the rest, I guess, kind of grew.
So during that time, the 9 years, you actually didn't do any architecture?
None.
Until, that's crazy.
No, no, no. Okay. I mean, I was out of the world completely.
That is unbelievable. Yeah. But, you know, the gifts and the talents, they come and they go in the different times and seasons for things, for sure.
I remember sitting in seminary classes, and while I was listening, because I'm very ADD, I would sketch and draw, you know, and so I would always do that, and, you know, always felt a little bit like maybe the Lord was tugging me in a different direction, but I was so content doing the vocational ministry.
Right.
And we talked about this, too. I thought when I left there that it would be, in some ways, a downgrade, like maybe it wouldn't be as important in eternal scope or maybe not as significant. But I'll tell you, the way, I guess, the Lord has opened up opportunities for me in this different sort of form of life and ministry has been so much more kind of broad and expansive that I'm just confident that that's what I was supposed to do.
Right. Be a great representative, whatever you're doing, you know, just do it with excellence and what you're obviously doing.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's amazing. Your work is so, so good. So in the different markets that you're in, you're obviously, you know, designing various vernaculars, our vernacular here, Manhattan, and then in Beverly Hills too. So that's what is so prolific about your work as well. But also, like, the size and scope, like, one of the reels that we were looking at, too, like, this incredible, like, I might even not be naming the vernacular correctly, but very, like, English Tudor and with the big driveway and all that. Where is that?
Not sure specifically. Let me think.
It's a big driveway. It's on, I don't know, anyway, okay.
We've got them all over the place. I mean, right now we're in Palo Alto, San Francisco, all the way down to San Diego and across Dallas, Houston, Utah, Rochester, New York, down to Jupiter, Florida, and all in between. So it's fun. I mean, in the last 3 weeks, I've been in multiple states. And
how do you find flying right now? Because our team came back from New York City last weekend, and we had a heck of a time getting out of here. So it was very stressful. So
it's
what are
challenging.
You?
It's challenging.
Right?
Yeah, I've been I've been on the good end and the bad end, and where most of the time it's been fine. But it has been challenging, some extended layovers and that sort of thing.
Right. So during COVID, were you basically shuttered, and did you not have work, or were you still finishing up on jobs that you had before?
You know, right when it hit, I was actually in out of state at a project, and literally coming home, it was like they were shutting the world down. And the next week, we had six projects go offline, and we were, you know, I was nervous. We never laid off anybody. We never, you know, I guess people went home because they mandated that, but we never shuttered our office in some respects. In fact, I never missed a day at the office. I went, safe because nobody else was there.
Yeah.
But after those six projects went offline, it was interesting because it was like six went offline and then 16 came back online. It was amazing, the growth. And I think everybody's been somewhat...
like a boomerang effect. That's what I feel like it is. Like it was stagnant and then like you got thrust into the future to catch up or something.
It's amazing. I mean, one of my very dear friends is the CEO of EBSCO, who owns Alice Beach. And when it first started, he was just, you know, we don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
But they have had the most significant growth in the last two and a half years than they've had the whole time. Yeah. It's remarkable.
It is
and
remarkable.
Quite unexpected.
Yeah, know? And I think, like, really, really blessed. Like, I know that a lot of good things have happened to people and a lot of bad things have, too. But in our own little enclave that we're in here, I find it to be, like, I mean, people say it's a bubble. I think it's more than that. It's like a, it's a really special place.
It is. It is.
It really is.
And honestly, and this, so all of my travels, and I don't want to overstate that. It's not like I'm some world traveler, but everybody knows about 30A.
Yeah.
And it whether it's in California, I was in south of France and a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody from international
to France?
Yeah, I have clients from Sydney, Australia. They know about Alice. They know about, you know, Rosemary and Water Sound. You mentioned early on Seaside. I mean,
the
I was a student in college, and one of our professors brought us down just to walk in the earlier throes in the late 80s and early 90s of Seaside's development and how new urbanism and the TND sort of concepts that were starting their resurgence and the impact of those. And that impact has been vast.
Well, I always had like in this area when I first moved here from New England 30 years ago, with all of the new urbanism communities and then the HOAs and whatnot demanding that you have to be a licensed architect, that if you were a licensed architect, this would be the best place you could possibly move to and build a business, because where else is there a stretch of 26 miles where, like, you basically can't almost build a house unless you're a licensed architect?
That's true.
I mean, that's...
Well, and I'll say to that point, too, that it proves that there at least is some value in having an architect engaged in a project. Not, I'm not trying to sell that because it's my profession. But, you know, for most people, and it seems to be, now I say most, but outside of this community, a house sometimes can be an afterthought. They say, what can I find sort of off the shelf? And for us, if we can engage with a client and we get to know those clients, I mean, the nuances of a particular life and family and interaction and understanding that it's, in many respects, their largest single investment. I mean, not just financially, but their time, their building memories. If you can customize and design something that's very bespoke, that fits them hand in glove, it is so important and valuable to do that. And I'll say this to folks from time to time. You know, if you know that you're going to spend a third of your life on a mattress, you usually want to be thoughtful at least in what you purchase.
Right.
If you know you're going to spend 20 or 30 years in a legacy home, even if it's one you're going to for only a few weeks or months every year, isn't it worth really being thoughtful in the design of that space? And so most of our clients do respect that.
Totally. I mean, and then, you know, long ago, like, there were so many marketing buzzwords, like, you know, St. Joe placemaking and new urbanism and a European sensibility and, like, all those things that were marketing terms, basically. But in all reality, the placemaking that is here right now with all of those thoughtful designs, I mean, that is probably one of the really big reasons why it's so significantly known right now.
Absolutely.
Because where else do you have, like, so much time and thought that has gone into Rosemary, Seaside, the St. Joe properties, even that you're working on in Camp Creek right now, too, which those are the estate homes, which I haven't seen any. Are any up
there's
completed
a few,
yet?
There's a few going up, but they're close,
okay,
not completed.
Yeah, I mean, I really need to take a look at those. I saw the master plan for what they were doing, but I thought it was very cool, and they have an acre property too.
They do have some.
Yeah, and that's like in where we live.
I know.
That's like
it's unheard
100
of.
Acres, yes, right?
Exactly.
Relatively speaking.
Exactly.
So that must be, are they must be really large homes too.
There are some. I mean, they're in a different way, maybe more sprawling, I think.
Well, I can't wait to see that and what you're doing there. How many homes in there are you doing?
We have 7 going in there now.
You do. That's great.
At least in the design.
Ooh, I want to see some. If you could take, next time you're down here and you're there, I would love to meet you.
Absolutely.
I'd love to really, really want to see what that came out of the ground, because about 5 years ago when we were working with St. Joe, that was like they were wargaming, getting ready for it.
So, it's been successful.
Yeah, I know.
They're selling them like crazy, as you'd expect.
With everything. that's going on. So a few minutes ago, I don't want to forget this, you touched on bespoke. So also you have a bespoke line too. Can you share some of that?
Yeah, that's with my friend that's the craftsman, the artisan. Okay. So we do garage doors. We do custom aluminum structural grade bed swings. Oh, he does okay. a lot of customized stuff for us, interior and exterior.
So
windows
that's the bespoke
and doors.
Line. Okay.
That's correct. Yep.
That's amazing. So when you are working with interior designers that aren't necessarily, you know, you're just working with them, you're collaborating and all that. So do you always maintain a hand in that so that you can see that finished vision so that you're happy with it?
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, we're working. In fact, on the way over here, I was on the phone with a very talented interior designer in Manhattan that mm-hmm. we're working on a project with. Mm-hmm. And I'm going up with our clients in September to spend 2 days with her to mm-hmm. view showrooms and that mm-hmm. sort of thing. So just, again, trying to create a product that's very symbiotic and mm-hmm. synergistic mm-hmm. so that the language of the architecture and interiors mm-hmm. at least collaborate. I mean, it doesn't have to be, you know, sort of all matchy-matchy,
right.
like a
right.
every
but
color.
But the heart
line's
of it, the intent.
Absolutely.
The intent has to be there creatively.
And I'm not a great critic or I don't want to be critical of others' work, but you do walk into spaces sometimes and you feel like they're a little schizophrenic. Mm-hmm. In other words, you know, maybe the exterior and the interior just feel like they're in conflict. Mm-hmm. And I think you can, if you're thoughtful in collaboration, mm-hmm. that you can create a much more kind of symbiotic right. product. And that's something, I mean, collaboration is one of the biggest buzzwords in our office. Mm-hmm. You know, I would say this, and again, you have to qualify it because I've heard somebody once say that humility is the hardest attribute to attain because once you think you've got it, you've lost it, right? So I don't want this to sound like, again, false humility,
right,
but
right.
I do think there's a sense in which we need to be mm-hmm. humble in our approach to mm-hmm. these projects because mm-hmm. they're not an ode to us as a designer. Mm-hmm. We're trying to understand and extract from our client their vision. Mm-hmm. But when we work with other interior designers or the interior designers on our staff or mm-hmm. we're working with builders, we recognize that everybody brings something significant to the table. Mm-hmm. And so in collaboration, I believe we produce our best product. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've been blessed with so many talented people that work around me in our office. And I'll say to them all the time, this is not an office of where hierarchy means anything in many mm-hmm. respects. We're an idea meritocracy, you know, mm-hmm. the best ideas mm-hmm. win. And so mm-hmm. if we sit around and our architects and interior designers are pitching an idea, it does not have to be my idea. Mm-hmm. In fact, that was why I didn't put my last name on our mm-hmm. company. Mm-hmm. I struggled with putting my first name on there. And somebody said, well, why don't you just put Christopher?
Half of it.
Yeah. It's a right. little bit more generic
yeah.
and maybe you can make a cool C. So I said, okay.
Oh.
So,
that's funny.
I love the idea of working in collaboration. So when we work with other interior designers all across the country uh-huh. and our interior designers on staff, I respect their input mm-hmm. and hopefully we can mm-hmm. mutually challenge each other to create the best product.
I'm the exact same way as that. And I absolutely love collaboration and that's how our shop works as well. And I only care about the finished product, and I don't care about how to get there.
Yeah.
And that means, you know, I mean, we have literally had, you know, I'll listen to an, you know, intern, and actually, you know, am interviewing our former intern after you right now, and she's very smart. And, you know, like, so when you're around a table and you're in the creative field, you know, you have to listen to everybody.
Amen.
Everybody yep. counts, you know, because once you don't, you lost like maybe like the best idea in the room if you like think you're the only one.
Yeah,
think
that's
of one,
so
right?
True.
You totally lose it.
Very well said.
So, after all of this, where do you go? You know, from here, like, what is the goal? Do you have one, or are you just like totally like amassing? Like, I don't know. Sometimes I have a goal, obviously myself, but sometimes I get so caught up in the work that sometimes you just keep going. And, you know, sometimes whatever the goal is, it's hard to keep remembering because you're so busy.
Yeah. Well, you know, I can say this too with a lot of qualifiers, but I've never worried about the money part of it. Mm-hmm. And we say that internally. Like, mm-hmm. We're not tracking hours where we say, okay, if we don't get this finished by this date, mm-hmm. we won't be profitable. We are passionate about good design, and we'll do whatever it takes mm-hmm. to get there. Right. And so for me, it's never been about the money. It's never been about, you know, creating something to self-aggrandize or mm-hmm. whatever. And I just turned 53 a week or so ago. I've got a 10 and an 8-year-old. I was late to the game with children, but
you're
I'm
still
having
young.
A
so
blast with that. And so for me, I'm thinking, what is the next mm-hmm. steps for our company in mm-hmm. the next 10 or 15 years? Mm-hmm. And we have such a wonderful team of young designers that have been with me for 7, 10, 12 years. Mm-hmm. And I've said to them, look, I want this to be about you and your generation, and how can we build something that is sustainable long-term for you? Mm-hmm. And so I would really like to roll this company to our team in the next 15 years mm-hmm. and see them take it to the next level. Mm-hmm. We recently elevated one of our young architects who was with us as an intern through school and has been on staff for the last several years to our design director. So we have a young lady who's an amazingly talented architect that is our new design director. We have another architect from Mississippi State who's been with us since he graduated, who's become our studio director. Mm-hmm. So folks like Rhea and Mac, who are just incredibly talented, that are on our team and have been on our team for a while, we're trying to figure out how to take it to the next level with them at the helm. Mm. And so that's sort of my vision. My son is 10, and he's very creative. He tells me all the time he either wants to be a pancake chef, which I like, uh-huh. or an architect.
Okay.
So if he wants to be an architect, I'd love for him to be involved one day. Mm-hmm. And
legacy.
Yeah,
yeah.
Maybe
creative.
My daughter. She's yeah. My wife is a nurse practitioner okay. and works in the NICU, and so she has some interest in the medical field mm-hmm. as an 8-year-old and, mm-hmm. and some in design. So I don't know. I mean,
amazing.
Honestly, we'd like to continue to expand. Our commercial division has grown significantly. Mm-hmm. We do a lot more commercial architecture mm-hmm. now. And so
one thing I didn't touch on that I know in your bio of what you are very good at, too, is land planning as well. So does that... Are you embedding in that as well?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, and we do some development work with other developers, and a lot of what we'll do are designing new urbanism communities with them.
Okay.
So that's something that
that's a big,
we're very passionate mm-hmm. about.
Are they locally? Or
the local? One of the developers we work with is local to Birmingham. Mm-hmm. One of the developers, in fact, I was with him this morning, mm-hmm. is local to this area. Okay. So.
That's awesome.
We have a lot of fun with it.
Yeah, I know. I bet that. Well, that's taking like your premise of once you get the vision for the house, then you're going to have all your collaborators. And then that's even going back to the beginning then before yep. the house, right?
Absolutely.
That's going to be, you know, what you're creating there for the whole sense of space. I can't imagine what your places look like, but when you are on that end of it, like, I really want to see some. And can you share some
Absolutely.
Names? Because yep. then with right oh. now, and then we'll put up... some of your projects that you've done.
Yeah, well, the Daniel Corporation's one that we work okay. with, Justin Weintraub, Harold Rips is a developer,
okay.
Premium Property Trust out of Birmingham is a developer we're working with. So all of those guys, they believe in the value of good design,
mm-hmm.
and they believe in the value of new urbanism, that you create synergies when you mm-hmm. when you build developments that are more pedestrian in orientation. And I think this is a little bit of a carryover from the things that I learned when mm-hmm. I worked in vocational ministry.
Mm-hmm.
So there was an era in our country, a lot of it was post-World War II, mm-hmm. where when you would design a community, it was very pedestrian in orientation. You had large front porches, you had sidewalks, you had street lamps. Then there was an era that, you know, is probably not the best for architecture or design when most of the design was pedestrian in orientation. You know, you might pull up to a house where mm-hmm. 70 or 80% of the front facade was a massive garage door, and you'd push a button, you'd drive in, you'd shut the world out. You'd go to the back of your house, you know, and just shut out the world. So new urbanism has really seen a resurgence in the pedestrian being the primary, mm-hmm. and we're very passionate about. But mm-hmm. it's more than just a single home. It has to sort of connect to in context mm-hmm. to a broader community for it to work. Mm-hmm. You know, that one of the things you see in Seaside or Alice mm-hmm. is mm-hmm. people walking from house to house and engaging with others, and we love that. We think there's, especially in the era we live in, where people are staring at their phones quite often, when you can push people out and say, welcome to my home, and I'm a part of the community in a very intentional way. And I think architecture and land planning can mm-hmm. it can't create that, but it can sort of facilitate the execution mm-hmm. of that.
Mm-hmm. It can.
And I think that's very important. And for yeah. these developers, it's something that they're passionate about. And mm-hmm. I would say this too, and this, I guess this goes a little bit beyond, but for us as a firm, people ask, what kind of work will you do? And I'll say, I don't mean this in a disparaging way, right? But I say, Lord willing, we'll never do a Dollar General, right? Unless it's a really cool one. Right? And they say, well, what scope will you do? Well, if somebody comes to us, like with Christopher Kids, and mm-hmm. they say, we want the coolest 200-square-foot treehouse, yeah. and we are passionate about materials, and we're passionate about good design, then we're all about it. It mm-hmm. doesn't matter if it's a massive 18,000-square-foot house mm-hmm. in Malibu mm-hmm. or a 200-square-foot house for a child in a wheelchair in, mm-hmm. you know, Selma, Alabama. We want to work with people who see the value in good design, and we can connect with them on that level. So I know that's a little bit going from the macro to the micro, like land planning to 200-square-foot tree houses, but it's all yeah. a commitment to
well,
design.
What it also says to me is that you are passionate about creating, and creating sometimes can be big, and sometimes it can
Absolutely.
Be small, yep. and small doesn't mean bad.
So well
it's
said.
It's really important
so
to whatever
well
you put your hands to basically do it with everything yeah. that you have, and nothing's too small, nothing's too big. Well, you have been inspirational.
Oh, thank you.
Impressive.
So I feel
delightful. I feel like I definitely have met a kindred spirit in you, and you have
Same.
Energized me as well today. And I thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm honored,
You're
honestly.
Welcome. Yeah, and continued success, but you have so much of it. I'm sure you're fine.
No,
I mean, you're just doing a great job,
well, thank
and I
you.
Appreciate you being here. Everybody, please, we're going to put up on the screen, you know, all of Chris's information for all of his different bespoke, retail, and the kids, just everything. This man is incredibly gifted and talented, and I am honored that we got the chance to talk this morning. And I appreciate you all for listening and watching V Speaks, Conversations with Heart and Soul. And I look forward to you tuning in again and learning more about Chris as well. Thank you, everybody. Have a good day. Bye.